Welcome to Booked, a programme that shakes the tree of literature hard till the juicy fruit tumbles off. And here's a point for my mum, because she listens to me all the time on the radio. My mum. My mum's proud of me being on the radio, so she insists that my dad listens in a separate room on a different radio because she thinks it puts the ratings up. So, hello, mum. Hello, dad. In your separate rooms, this is Ian in his little talking room with a knob on. We're in Cheltenham again, guests of the Every Person Theatre. And our panellists today, people Miles Kington and Dilly Keen. And competing for a weekend creative writing course, persons Mark Thomas and Roger McGough. So, sharpen our pencils and boot up the screen. Fictional detectives. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a fictional detective, gumshoe, dick or sleuth. What you have to do is describe these gumshoes without using any of the words written on the card. You can pass on one, and you've only got a minute. So, Mark and Roger, off you go.
American Baldy, like lollipops.
Kojak.
Right.
Agatha Christie, wonderful.
Poirot.
Old lady.
Mrs. Marples.
Yep.
This is a French, clumsy detective.
Inspector Clouseau.
Oui, oui.
This is a very, very tough, hard-drinking guy. And Raymond Chandler.
Ah, yes. Marlowe. This was a man of the cloth. Victorian detective of the cloth.
Oh, was it Father Brown?
It was indeed Father Brown.
This is, blimey, Umberto Eco.
The Naming of the Rose.
Yeah, that's the book that he's in.
Brother.
And his second part of the title actually is the dog that appears in a Sherlock Holmes theme. The second part, the Hound of the
Baskervilles.
Right, and that's the first bit.
Bill.
Baskerville.
Oh, yes.
But his first name is something of Baskerville.
5 seconds.
And it's the Bill of Baskerville. It's William.
Time's up.
William of Baskerville.
William of Baskerville. Time's up, Roger, time's up.
Oh, is it?
Yes, Fred.
Just getting going.
Miles and Dilly.
Is American looking for a bird from Malta?
By
Dashiell Hammett?
No, I wouldn't get that.
No, passing.
I hate detective stories. He smoked a pipe.
Maigret?
No, and he had a hat, silly hat. And he had cocaine addiction.
Sherlock Holmes.
Him.
Capital of Ceylon?
Colombo.
Seconds.
He was Belgian. And
Echo Poirot?
Yes.
Oh, Monk, medieval, written by a woman with a strange name.
Oh, Cadfell. He's played by John Thor in the telly.
Morse.
15 seconds.
Dickensian inspector, named after a pail.
Bucket. Oh, good heavens.
5 seconds.
And this is French written...
Try Mega again.
Yeah.
Oh. What? Oh, yes, woman. American. Feminist. Modern.
Vi Warshavsky.
Yes. It looks like an
Indian. Vi Warshavsky. Time's up now.
It's all one word.
Can I just say, that was a lovely moment when Miles picked it up and just went, good Lord, American, modern, woman.
But you see, it's written all one word. I thought it was an Indian name. Vi Warshavsky.
Ah. Round two, the interview. With the honesty of fly-on-the-wall observation, our panellists disclose the interviews given by fictional characters as they go for contemporary jobs. Some of the jobs they've applied for will strike you as odd. But through cunning interrogation and probing questioning, we discover their motives for applying and, of course, ultimately, their suitability. So, Mark, who's on your shortlist of one?
Well, my shortlist of one is from the Brothers Grimm, which is the troll under the bridge. And it will become apparent the job that he's going for. And I'm the troll.
Now, Mr. Troll under the bridge, let me just get your particulars in order. You first came to the public's attention by guarding a bridge. This was a job you successfully held for some time until one of the billy goats Gruff pushed you off the bridge into a perilous ravine.
Yes, technically I was made redundant.
So you have, rather late in life, decided on a career change?
Yes, yes.
Which leads you here to the Ecumenical Council?
Yes.
And you want to be the Archbishop of Canterbury?
Yes.
You know what, the position isn't vacant at the moment, don't you?
Oh, yes, but at the job club we are encouraged to aim high and show initiative. And although the position isn't vacant, being a troll I would have no qualms about killing the present Archbishop should I get the job.
Killing?
Oh, yes, been done before. King killed Archbishop. You make me Archbishop and you wouldn't get any more trouble from the monarchy. I'd kill them. Yeah, me and Ruby Wax, we'd do it.
Why do you want to be the Archbishop of Canterbury?
Oh, I knew you'd ask this one. I'm a people person. Nice to meet you, nice to eat you.
Yes, very well, but I think you'll find in the Bible, and it's an important part of our faith, says that you shalt not kill.
Ah, that only applies to humans. Now, I'm a troll, and as such, I would have no sense of morals or ethical integrity, which I think would be a bonus in this job. The way I see it, if you are in religion, you've got to have aggressive marketing, which doesn't mix well with morals.
Go on.
The most important thing is to get people into our church. To do this, I propose that I will drive around Britain on a big truck with a loud hailer saying, "Go to church! We've got the electoral register. If you don't turn up, I know where you live." Then, once inside, I see my jobbers standing at the back by the doors to make sure they don't sneak out.
Yes, but there are very complex and controversial theological issues to be debated and resolved. For example, what do you think of homosexual Christians?
Very tasty. The tambourines do tend to get stuck in your teeth, but very tasty.
But should the church sanction gay sex?
Well, I have done my research and I have noticed that you have had a few splits recently on various issues like gay Christians and women priests. And to be honest, I think if you had a troll in the top job, I think you'll find that the focus of debate will shift. I'm 10 foot high, I've got breath that will knock John Selwyn Gummer out, I'm covered in matted hair with bits of my dinner still in it, and I can do juggling tricks with live humans. People aren't going to see me and say, "No, I'm not accepting communion from a woman." They'd be saying, "I don't care as long as it's human."
And Miles, who's biting their nails in your anteroom?
Well, slightly unwisely, perhaps. I've chosen Thompson and Thompson, the two detectives from the Tintin stories. It's a bit hard to tell what they do in the Tintin stories, except get everything wrong. So, I also rather unwisely elected to play both of them myself.
And what are they applying for?
They are applying for jobs of bodyguard to the Prime Minister. So, Dilly's interviewing both of me.
So, you are applying for the post of bodyguard to the Prime Minister, are you?
Yes, we are.
So am I.
What are your names?
Thompson.
Thompson.
You both seem exactly the same to me.
Well, we are.
Yes, we certainly are ducks.
Is there no difference between you at all?
Yes, I'm Thompson, spelt with a P.
So am I.
No, you're not.
Well, I had a P last week.
Well, I'm taking the P this week.
Do you do this sort of back chat the whole time?
Yes, we do.
Of course, it's funnier in French. But not much.
So, you both want to be bodyguard?
Yes, we do.
Yes, so do I.
Why both of you?
Because there's safety in numbers.
In what way?
Well, some numbers are very safe.
27, for instance, that's a very safe number.
Is it?
Yes. Say 27.
27.
See? You're completely unharmed.
Have you done much of this kind of work before?
What kind of work?
Bodyguarding.
Oh, yes, yes. We have been bodyguards to some really top people.
Like who?
President Kennedy.
President Sadat.
John Lennon.
Oh, and Gandhi.
What? Mahatma Gandhi?
No, Mrs. Gandhi.
But all the people you've guarded have been killed.
Have they? Well, that certainly explains why we keep changing job, anyway.
Yes, but when they were killed, we were not guarding them at the time.
What were you doing?
Having a tea break.
So tell me, what do you do when someone you're guarding is attacked?
Well, as soon as we find a body, we leap into action.
And we rush out and arrest Tintin.
Why? Is Tintin the guilty party?
Oh, no.
It's just something we do.
You see, it puts the real criminal off guard.
Yes, it makes the real guilty person relax.
It makes him relax and go on holiday.
It makes him relax and go on holiday to Barbados.
So as soon as we see someone relaxing, going on holiday to Barbados,
Bingo.
We've got him.
Aha. I see. So what would happen if you were guarding the Prime Minister and he was attacked? What would you do then?
Well, he wouldn't be, you see.
No, because of our plan.
Yes, we have a plan, you see.
What is the plan?
It's a plan we've used ourselves, and it always works. You see, the reason we have never been attacked ourselves is that people never know which one of us is which, so they don't know who to go for.
And how would this apply to the Prime Minister?
Our plan is to find a brother for the Prime Minister, looking exactly the same, but actually much stupider, and make him do all the public appearances so the PM's in no danger.
It may surprise you to know that we do this already.
You what?
Oh, yes. Almost all the Prime Minister's public appearances are undertaken by his brother.
So the Prime Minister's quite safe, then?
Oh, yes.
Well, what do you want us for, then?
To protect Terry Major Ball.
Why?
Because he's in great danger.
Who from?
From people who have bought his book and read it and can't get their money back.
So now it's time to address the public, or more importantly, time to let them address us. Here they reveal the kernel of a book, and what our panellists have to do is crack it. But ho, have a care there, because they sometimes mislead. So Miles and Dilly.
I went to see the film with my wife.
I thought this isn't really my cup of tea.
At first, you could mistake him for a gentleman.
Not to be read on a dark train.
And when the victim said, I want to go home to my mother.
She sort of meets someone who has carried out murders.
The central character is a man after my own heart.
Very gripping and plausible.
A rough initiation for a rookie cop.
I felt there's no gratuitous violence in it.
Penitentiary.
It's a sequel. That's unusual, whereas the original character from the original book doesn't actually feature.
We stood up and walked out.
Was the expression rookie cop?
Yes.
Wish English people wouldn't say things like that. I want to go home. E.T. wanted to go home.
No.
No, Dilly and I don't go and see violent films, so we haven't...
Mark might know it then.
I do know, I think. Right, first of all, it was film. So, film and book, there's a sequel.
Godfather.
There's two books here. Now, it's a scary book, because you don't want to read it on the chain. The Mummy, I Want to Go Home, so someone's been kidnapped. Rookie Cop is leading inevitably to The Silence of the Lambs.
Yes. All right, Mark and Roger, try this one.
She's let herself go. It's all about living a lie. She's loud.
It made me feel like not getting married to...
The sort of trap that some people find themselves in.
One great vortex of anger.
She's frowsy.
An extremely articulate academic.
It's very claustrophobic.
I'm sure the elder couple invent a non-existent...
Sexual excitement.
She's coarse. And it's an evening that they spend together. She's bitter.
It sounds like it should be the title of a jolly song.
Frowsy woman.
Frowsy academic woman.
Academic.
Lots of anger. Trapped in marriage. And... it should be the title of a song. Is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Yes, it is. And now to beginnings and endings. Two of our audacious panellists will rewrite the beginnings and endings of towering texts without the benefit of a safety net. So, Dilly, lead us up the ladder and swing us out your new beginnings and endings.
Well, I've rewritten the beginning and ending of Les Misérables by Victor Hugo. It was the best of musicals. It was the worst of musicals. It was the age of art, the age of artifice. It was the epoch of tunefulness, the epoch of noise. Lord Mackerel Hummingtosh sat in the old leather-winged chair in his study. Strewn all around him were discarded newspaper cuttings, and now and then he leaned forward to pick up one or another in his feverish fingers. Rubbish, cried one in bold letters. A pile of old poo, yelled another. Great expectorations, said yet another. Truly, in spite of all his great wealth and all his success, Lord Hummingtosh was a miserable man. He thought enviously of his old partner, the Duke of Webberloyd, the richest man in all of London, upon whose boulevard the sun never set. He fulminated against his own bad judgment. What on earth had possessed him to employ Arnold Schoenberg to write a musical? How could he have expected the man who had invented the whole tone scale to write a happy-go-lucky sing-along crowd-pleaser that would pull in the coachloads? Suddenly, Lord Hummingtosh started from his seat, his eyes bright with the germ of an idea.
Perhaps he had not lost his touch after all. Picking up the phone, he barked at his secretary. Do I employ anyone in America? Yes, Lord Mackerel, she replied. Then sack them. Sack them all, cried Lord Hammingtosh, galvanized into action. And call me a hansom cab. I'm going to find a new writer. And a little later it ends. Lord Hammingtosh sat in the stalls, surrounded by London's rich and famous, by friends and critics alike. All the bigwigs were there, Dolly Parton, Joan Collins. Yes, it was a truly great theatrical event. Then, as the lights dimmed and the crowd fell silent, his heart was filled with a strange stillness. If he'd been able to write his thoughts, they would have been these. I see vengeance, and the jurymen, and Billington and de Jong, and the long ranks of oppressors who have risen on the destruction of an absolutely terrific night out. I see a beautiful show and a brilliant cast rising from the abyss, and I see fabulous till receipts mounting at the box office. I see them flocking in sharabanks from Kettering, from Luton, from Dunstable, and from Westcliff-on-Sea. For it is a far, far better song that I sing now than I have ever sung, and it is a far, far better show that I mount now than I have ever mounted before.
And Roger, which author's wrath are you risking?
Tolkien. And, of course, this will be Lord of the Rings. Mr. Bilbo Baggins of Bag End undid the button of his yellow tunic and burped loudly. Excuse me, Frodo, he said. Must have been the dried runes I had for breakfast. His young cousin smiled. I'd save my breath if I were you, Bilbo. What with your 11th birthday party coming up next week? My word, you'll need all your breath to blow out 111 candles on a cake. And what with Frodo being 33 and out of his tweens on the very same day? What a party it was going to be. Hobbiton was in a state of high excitement. The brandy books and the Sackville Bagginses. Folk from all over the shire talked of little else. In the Ivy Bush, the small inn on the Bywater Road, the gaffer was holding forth. If I'm not mistaken, young Frodo Baggins must leave home and make a perilous journey to the cracks of doom, destroy the ring forever, thus spoiling the Dark Lord of his evil purpose. Sounds pretty doomy to me, said old Noakes. Do you think there'll be sausage rolls? Where? Said the gaffer. At the party. Course, there's bound to be. And then volivants and chicken legs. Bound to be. Ooh, what a party it's going to be. They all agreed what a party it was going to be. And the ending comes 1,668 pages later. Phew, what a party that turned out to be. Said Bilbo. I thought people would never go home. Yes, indeed, said Frodo. Ah, well, time to roll, said Bilbo. Why not, said Frodo, and passed the old man his leather pouch and packet of Rizzlers. Puffing contentedly, the pair rode through the Shire and the White Downs, to Mithland and the Grey Heaven and the long firth of Lune. And as they went, Frodo sang softly a little song with funny made-up words and lots of capital letters. Gunevil dragons, moisty mountains, wicky-wacky dwarfs and silver fountains, allegory and stereotype woven into mystic hype. It's hypnotizing, be on your guard. To kick the hobbit is very hard.
And now, the Black Bag. A fiendish round in which our brave contestants dip their hands into unknown material. We call it the Black Bag. That'll do, that'll do. That's plenty, that's enough. Inside this black bag, they will find three objects. Each object represents part of the plot of a novel, and together they symbolise a work of literature. What our panellists have to do is feel and describe the objects and then identify the book. So, panellists, are you ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Good. Place your hands in the bag. Dilly! Begin describing now. It's your turn first.
Oh, this mine is absolutely full. Now, there's something very squishy. In a... Well, ooh, it's wrapped in cling film, and it feels like... Oh, yeah, it feels like dinner, uncooked, and it's got a polystyrene tray. Sort of sausage meat, perhaps?
No. No. And then there's another black bag inside, which is... I can't get my fingers into that.
Is it actually a bag, do you think?
It is a little money purse.
Right. So you've got a money purse.
And then there's a block or something. Oh, it's a box, and I'm opening it, and there's nothing in it. So an empty box, money, yes. And cling film wrapped unidentified food.
Exactly.
It's obviously the mill on the floss.
Well, it's the something, isn't it?
It's the misanthrope. The miser.
What about the lumpy stuff?
I have no idea what it is. I just feel a
have
bit
a
more.
Peep.
It's meat.
Is yes. It, how much does it weigh, approximately, would you say? The audience know what it is.
Merchant of Venice.
Merchant of Venice, exactly.
What's the box, then?
The box is the casket. Mm-hmm. And a pound of real flesh. Hold it up and show the pound of flesh. Well, I'll try this at home, but... The audience can have that. The best clapper gets that pound of flesh. Deduction. Roger, put your hand in the black bag. Le bag.
Right, the bag. You see? First thing I feel is a hard-boiled egg. Hope it's hard-boiled. Ow, it isn't. Pass the towels. Right, one... eggy thing. Egg. Oh, egg cup. Another egg cup. A bracelet. A bracelet?
Yep.
Right?
A bracelet. An egg.
Oh, and... Ow!
Something shell, I think you'll find it is.
No, it's... It's a nettle, so a holly.
So it's a bracelet, some holly.
Bracelet, holly, holly...
An egg. And an egg cup.
Oh.
Pretty obvious to me.
It's almost me. It's the... Bracelet.
Egg.
Somebody just told us in the audience.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Very good.
Excellent.
Holly. Yes, Holly, the girl. Holly.
Holly go lightly. So we got the egg cup and the egg because it was breakfast, and we got the holly because her name was Holly, and there was diamond bracelets because that was it.
Yeah, that's good.
Round the black bag. That's one of my favourites. All right, Miles, put your hand in the black bag.
Hiding to nothing. It feels like a wig. And there's a round, thin thing. And there's a plastic thing which feels like dentures. No, it can't be.
Well, it might be.
Yes. Teeth. Feels like teeth.
Got
teeth, hair, and maybe lipstick, maybe not.
Hook on black. The lipsticky thing. Fondle that a bit more.
Right, two ends. Here we go.
Try fondling one end of it more than the other.
Oh, yes. It's empty.
It's empty, yes.
Yes, it's empty. It's a very long thimble.
It's that kind of shape.
Yes. Oh, it's a sort of pipette. It's a glass tube.
It's a...
Pipette, yeah.
It's bigger than a pipette.
It's a pip.
It's a pip. It's a
teeth
test
wig.
Tube.
It's Jekyll and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde, exactly. Right, and Mark, place your hand inside the very black bag.
Oh, blimey. Woo-hee. This is quite... This is like a... There's a kind of a feather boa here, I think. Can I use two hands?
Yes.
It's hair. Okay. And I think it's a hairy puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a rectangular type thing, lipstick. It feels like a lipstick thingy. And then there's a compact, a little compact, which has got the, it's got a little, it's a face makeup. So it's makeup, lipstick, and a hairy puppet. Well, this is going well so far.
What else?
Oh no, hang on! It's a mask. It's a mask.
So it's an ugly mask.
It's an ugly mask.
And beauty and something. Horrible.
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. Yes. Now, a variation on an old friend, sound effects. We produced a couple of commercials advertising famous books. And what you, our teams, have to do is guess which literary work we're trying to sell you. Miles and Dilly, yours first.
He was a knight spurned.
For heaven's sake, can't you see I can't walk?
Oh,
found her mate.
Woo!
But was forced to flee. A woman with towering strength. A man with enormous guns. Desperate to be together. Destined to live apart.
How did that forget-me-not get there?
Could the spurned knight be Sir Clifford Chatterley?
Mm-hmm.
Could it be Lady Chatterley's?
Yes. How did you arrive at that, though?
The only spurned knight I could think of was Sir Clifford Chatterley. And then it all fitted in after that. Guns and forget-me-not.
What is a forget-me-not, anyway?
Well, they stuck flowers over each other.
They stuck flowers all over each other. So what's the name of the book?
Lady Chatterley's Lover. A little bit.
Right.
Lady Chatterley's Lover. Sorry.
Roger and Mark, what's yours?
There's a thin line between reality and the unconscious world. A world where up is down, down is sideways, and sideways is no place to be. It's easy to get into the secret garden. All you have to do is drink from the glass bottle. But be ready for the unexpected.
We both think it's Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
Drinking and falling down, upside down, and whatever.
Was it Alice
Cooper?
Because I heard the Velvet Underground there.
It was Jimi Hendrix.
And Jimi Hendrix.
And finally, to the small ads. A chance once again for lonely characters to meet up with a view to fun and possibly something more long-term like Hadrian's Wall. Miles, you can start. Pluck my heartstrings.
Spider-Man. I've got a lonely outside for Spider-Man. Man with thing about webs. Wishes to meet lady with similar interests who must undertake not to bite his head off during love play.
Mark, have you got one?
I've got Ruth Ellis, which is recently widowed, single woman, needs man, urgent, dying for it, literally, can't hang around, no scaffolders.
Dilly, have you got one?
I've got Heidi. Lonely goat herds, he seeks healthy lass for companionship and mountaineering. Knowledge of stock management essential. You blow my alpenhorn and I'll churn your butter.
Roger.
It's the incredible shrinking man. Incredible shrinking man seeks incredibly kinky lady before incredible shrinking winky disappears.
Any more?
Well, I've tried Jeeves. Gentleman's gentleman wishes to meet lady's lady. Sole purpose, some intelligent conversation.
That's it, I'm out, mate.
Right, that's the one then. Right, well, I'll finish then with a goodbye poem to my mum and dad. Goodbye, mum. Goodbye, dad, in your separate rooms. Turn off your radio soon, because voices you hear later may not be mine. And I don't want you to be confused in your separate rooms. It just remains for me to thank Mark Thomas, Roger McGough, Miles Kington and Dilly Keane. Booked is researched by Kate Withers, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yobbs, and presented by me, Ian McMillan. Goodbye.